Item number nine, 2018-19 sport fishing rule simplification. This is a decision. We had briefing last meeting. So Steve, I'll turn it over.
Holy Christ. I'll be ready. Take oxygen before I gotta read all that. Hello, Steve.
Did you get my voicemail the other day? Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Commissioners. Director Store. We're here this afternoon to present to you an opportunity to make a decision on sport fishing rule simplification. So this is a decision to be made. And the team will tag team the presentation as we go through it again. And I believe, Chris, are you leading us off today? So,
okay. Thanks, Steve. For the record, Chris Dawn, the Region 1 Fish Program Manager in Spokane. I'll walk you through the outline of where we're headed and get on to this presentation. So, what you'll see today is under the rule process and notebook materials, you should have a notebook. We'll break down all those materials in a future slide. There'll be three sets of or groups of rules that we'll present to you, those that we would recommend you adopt as proposed, those we would recommend adopt as modified, and some rules that we changes that we would recommend you not adopt. We have room for commission questions, and then when asked, move into main motion or amendments of the main motion, and then adopt motion. So to harken back, we've been here three times. This is the third time. We're pleased to be here for the third time and bring you what we think is a final package. Going back where we started January through August, working staff proposals, September, November, out to public comment. We took somewhere right around 1,800 to 2,000 public comments through the website and at public meetings. We had six workshops in September and October, came to the commission the first time in October 27th, then went out with the 102 filing and added a web page to take public comment on November 2nd. November 30th, public comment period ended off of the website. November 9th, we came back to the commission. I gave you a briefing on what we had heard from public comment, as well as the public had a chance to comment to you in person at that meeting. And that brings us to January 19th, which we're looking for commission action on the recommended proposals that we'll give you recommended, do not recommend, and adopt as proposed soon. A reminder, the rules that you are taking action on today will be in effect for fisheries, for game fish rules, July 1st of 2018. As I said earlier, what's contained in the notebook in front of you is a summary sheet with draft motion language, the 18-19 sport fishing rule change proposals, the CR 102 and recommended adjustments to the WAC, and finally, a WAC language adjustments, and you can find those in there. They are in color. And with that, I'll leave it to Steve.
Thank you, Chris. We'll go into the staff recommendations for which rules we think you should adopt and those not. Group A are the ones that we suggest that you adopt them as we proposed. Those include the proposal to eliminate the minimum length daily limits on eastern brook trout. There was fairly good public support for that one. The mandatory steelhead retention requirement. Recall there was quite a bit of discussion about how we should move forward on that. The consistent language for game fish possession limits. We had virtually unanimous support for that, except for the gentleman that didn't believe he had any possession limits applying to him already. The duplicative landowner rules, recall this is we are carrying some rules that municipalities have put into place You heard some comment this morning. One of the ones that we have carried forward a lot is internal combustion motors prohibited or fishing from a floating device. Those are a number of the ones that we would get rid of. I do want to point out that Merrill Lake was one that's our rule that we want in place to support a quality fishery. So we did not propose in your packet deleting that internal combustion motor restriction in that system. So the comment this morning was actually already been addressed. Separating trout and steelhead rules, we were going to propose having a separate listing for those in each water body. We suggest you adopt that as proposed. Standardizing juvenile-only waters. Recall this one is we're going to allow senior anglers over 70, excuse me, and those folks with ADA cards to be able to fish on juvenile waters only. We're going to allow hatchery steelhead retention in any water body where they would be caught. This rule is already in place for Puget Sound, and we're suggesting we extend that across the state. Standardizing the stream season to begin the Saturday before Memorial Day and ending October 31st. And finally, standardizing the whitefish-only season to be December 1 through February 28th, or the last day of February. So those are the rules we suggest you adopt as proposed, or that we recommend you adopt as proposed. Get to some of the meatier issues. So there are the Group B. We are recommending a modification to a couple of these. And we believe that those are responsive to the public comment that we've heard from folks. So we had proposed statewide standard rules for river, streams, and beaver ponds, and we have 6 suggested modifications to those. And then we had standardized rules for lakes, ponds, and reservoirs, and we have 2 minor modifications to suggest there. I'll walk you through each of these modifications. So on the streams, rivers, and beaver ponds, modification 1, we heard significant concern about deregulating walleye, bass, and catfish throughout the state for rivers and streams. The commission has previously implemented, I'll say, a surgical or strategically designated streams and systems in the Columbia up through Chief Joseph Dam, which is essentially the anadromous zone. We had proposed expanding that to all rivers and streams, but based on the public comment that we heard, our modified recommendation is that we standardize that only for the tributaries and their tributaries that flow into the Columbia below Chief Joseph Dam. So this keeps it only in the area that it currently exists, but it would be applied to all tributaries and streams within that area. And we think that that's simpler than having streams right next to each other, which have different regulations on them. So we would not expand this to the statewide area. Keep it just in the anadromous zone that has previously been approved. Modification number 2, a lot of concern was expressed from wild steelhead advocates and folks that are supportive of our wild sea-run cutthroat populations. A little concern that the proposed regulations might take us a step back on some of our conservation efforts. So we had put forth a modified proposal that in the following designated wild steelhead gene banks, that we would require the release of all wild rainbow trout, Omicus, Oncorhynchus micus, and all wild cutthroat trout. It doesn't afford quite the protection that some of the folks were hoping for, but it's not quite where we had hoped to get in our simplification efforts and trying to balance out that conservation and simplicity and opportunity. So the gene banks that we're proposing to implement this in are the Nisqually, Solduck, North Fork Tule Green, East Fork Lewis, the Wind, and the Gray Chinook. So essentially the west side of the state. Modification number 3, we had proposed an early closure of the Lewis River above Swift Reservoir. This is from Eagle Cliff Bridge up to Big Creek. This is a bull trout stronghold down in the southwest part of the state, and we were going to close that river beginning July 15th because of some nefarious activities occurring in there while the bull trout are swimming upstream to spawn. There was some feedback from the public that perhaps we didn't need to close that entire reach for that length of time. So we've modified the proposal to close only up to Muddy River beginning July 15th. The other stretch would stay open as it currently is. And this stretch from the Eagle Cliff Bridge to Muddy River would also align with the stretch immediately below Eagle Cliff Bridge. So there's at least some continuity in that area. And that, again, is to address some of the public comments that we heard on the proposal. Number four, we had proposed eliminating a small fly fishing only area in the Klamath River, or Kalama River, excuse me. We felt that it wasn't receiving the use that it might have received historically, and I believe there were some hatchery changes that contributed to that. The public comment we heard was that was still a valuable opportunity to folks, and they did not want to relinquish that fly fishing only opportunity. So we're suggesting that we not eliminate that opportunity, leave it in there. It doesn't quite simplify as we'd hope, but you know, well, it is what it is. Number five, Kalama River from the 6420 road to Kalama Falls. We had suggested opening that entire section. It's been closed for many years up there. Public concern was that there wasn't a lot of access in that area, and it was providing a sanctuary for summer steelhead up in there. So we modified our proposal to just open a portion of that only up to Jack Creek. And number six, on the Stillaguamish River, we had proposed to simplify the regulations by removing some of the selective gear rules in the lower part of the river modifying when you could and couldn't keep trout. We're trying to standardize some the very lowest section with the second section. We actually had a fair number of folks that were suggesting that we needed even more strict regulations in there, but we didn't feel that those adding more fly fishing and catch and release requirements was in the spirit of our simplification effort. So at this point, what we're recommending is that we just retain the status quo on the Stillaguamish River, leave it as it is, and just move forward from there. So we've got a opportunity for questions at the end, but maybe I should see if there are any questions here.
Any questions, Commissioner?
Question?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks again for a very thorough treatment of this in a very organized manner over the course of time. My question is not on the adopt rules is modified section, but one right before that, number three, eliminate mandatory steelhead retention.
Page six of the presentation.
Page six of the presentation, and page four on the big part of the briefing book. the question is that. Is it the case now that there are different hatchery retention numbers for those places where there are hatchery retention rules? For example, the East Fork of the Lewis, I understand, has a 3 hatchery retention limit. I don't know what it is offhand on the Grand Ronde or somewhere else. So is it different river by river when you get into mandatory retention situation as it is?
Correct. There were some systems that when we implemented mandatory retention that we had boosted the limit to 3, and that gave folks a chance to, okay, if I've got to keep one that I didn't really want to keep, I might still have some, still might be able to catch 2 nice ones. But we didn't, I don't believe that we uniformly applied that across all areas. We're not actually suggesting to adjust the limit with this elimination of that rule. So some of those higher limits would still be in effect in certain areas.
So with regard to the question of whether to keep this or not, may get down to how often do people actually reached the limit anyway. So for those who might advocate taking this off, you know, they might have one perspective. Another perspective might be different. So in terms of the East Fork of the Lewis, for example, do you have any Creole information or anything otherwise that would say it doesn't matter if it's 2-3-0 or anything, it's such a rare event that it's not really that consequential? Or on the Grand Ronde, do you have any Creole information that says that for those people who like to fish all day and don't want to get off the river after 10 o'clock in the morning, if they get lucky and catch two, that, by the way, the catch per unit of effort is very high, and so this does make quite a difference?
I can give to the Grand Ronde because specifically I deal with that. I think you're argument about Western Washington's likely accurate in most cases. The likelihood of achieving the daily limit for hatchery steelhead and not keeping them when you catch them is somewhat low. This rule does, however, impact interior summer steelhead more. Grand Ronde is a good case where what we're seeing is folks can easily achieve the daily limit, which in the Grand Ronde is 3, and it's very common for them to do that. They drive considerable distance to get there because it's remote, and then their feedback to us is, I don't want to end after 3. I drove 5 hours to get here. What we're seeing in the Creel data is, previous to this rule, an angler would have encountered 6 steelhead, and they would have told us 5 of those were hatchery. They killed 2 and let the remainder go. Now, when we interview that angler, they'll tell us, yeah, they caught 6 steelhead, they killed 2 hatchery fish, and they let 4 wild fish go because they don't want to be criminalized through the rule. So as we do this over time and build our exploitation models that then explain to the federal government why our permit works the way it does, it could affect the duration of fisheries because our actual interception rate of wild fish is being influenced by this reporting. And so my take on the mandatory steelhead retention rule and why I was hoping to get rid of it is I think it's going to shorten the number of days that anglers can fish simply because they're playing the game. And we're not really getting a conservation gain by doing that. What I think we need to do next, and we're challenged with this, is better outreach to the public to explain to them why it's valuable to keep hatchery fish, and then advertise those places where we think we have straying issues that could be solved through exploitation, and that likely would have a better result than this current rule.
And as a follow-up, on the West Side rivers, if there are folks that occasionally catch a hatchery steelhead, in terms of the effect on the conservation argument, that would be, it'd be good to keep all of those. If it's a rare event, do you find most people are keeping them anyway? And by eliminating the rule, you're not really going to cause a conservation problem?
We do have some data that we could maybe tear into, but we didn't do that. I can give you my personal experience, which is I like to steelhead fish in Western Washington. I am generally not inclined to throw a hatchery steelhead back. There are some that get by, and they can be downstream kelts that are not preferable for an angler to keep. But those fish have already gone and committed the sin that we wanted them to avoid. So asking an angler to harvest that fish isn't gaining a conservation gain either. That would be my spin on it. We could dig into the data if you'd like.
That's fine. Thank you.
Yeah. Just so it's clear in my mind, how does this impact, say, the Mattow River, the Wenatchee River, those examples where we have mandatory retention?
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill. So up in the upper Columbia, where we don't have steelhead seasons listed in the pamphlet, because without going into details, these are different types of fisheries than what we experience even in the Grand Ronde. And so in our permit is some language, our ESA permit is language about mandatory retention. And so when we execute those fisheries in the Medhow and the Wenatchee, we are required to have that as part of the emergency regulation. And so that will be the exception to the rule. And I get that it's a little little confusing and odd, but it has to do with the nature of our ESA permit and that, you know, these permits aren't recreational fishing permits. They're what we term conservation permits, which is to help control the numbers of hatchery spawners on the spawning grounds.
Right. And so those that will remain in those watersheds. Good.
I just want to go back to what Don was saying, and as always, Chris is generally, not always, but most of the time, some of the time, Chris is right. But in the Rond, it was a big deal. And I was trying to, when they first implemented this, what they were talking about starting in September, some dang thing. And yeah, I fought this one tooth and nail, and finally got moved to what, first year there for a while. But no, it's easy to do this. And then what was really tying us up was the two-day possession limit. So, I mean, guys had planned on coming down there and fishing for 3 or 4 days. All of a sudden, after day two, they got sent home. So, no, I'm really glad to see them do this. And like what Chris said, that there comes a point in time that we get too good at catch and release. There are times that we need to be keeping these fish, and I think that's just an education thing. So, but we were fishing on Oregon fish and everything else, and actually Oregon was the one that helped us get this rule beat back a ways. So, okay.
Okay, proceeding along. On the standard rules for lakes, ponds, and reservoirs, we had two modifications that we wanted to recommend. First one was Coldwater Lake, another local system down here. There was concern, I believe, that we had suggested a daily limit of 2 over 14. Folks felt that this was one of their quality lakes down in this area, and that might be a little too liberal. So our modified recommendation is to adjust that to 1 over 18. To maintain that quality fishery there. And modification number two, some lakes up in Whatcom County, Faison, Terrell, and Tennant. We had previously worked with anglers up in that area to carve out some opportunities that would allow folks to be fishing while duck hunting was going on without folks getting shot. And their concern was that if we simplified those rules up there, that could create some safety issues. They suggested that we retain those existing regulations that essentially keep folks out of boats when duck hunting season is going on. They can boat around the lake to get to where they want to go, but then they have to get out. So, excuse me. So those were two modifications that we had on the standard rules for lakes, ponds, and reservoirs. The Group C do not adopt. One of the rules that we thought was fairly benign but created a landslide of public opposition was the chumming regulation. At this point, we're suggesting that we just retain the status quo, which is that chumming is not permitted in most lakes unless we specifically exempt it and allow it, and that we would continue to allow it on those water bodies where it was previously allowed. But that was it. Those would be the only ones. Eliminating panfish special rules. You might recall the great testimony from the folks from the Potholes Banks Moses Lake area. So we're suggesting that we just drop the elimination of this rule as well and just stick with the status quo for right now. And then finally, the rule regarding fishing for trout with bait. This is the one that says every trout you catch with bait counts towards your limit, whether you retain it or not. Again, we were surprised at the outcry and the outrage over that one. We're suggesting that we not adopt that one. So any questions on that? Those last groups there?
Seems like you listened well.
We do try to listen.
I just want to express my thanks to staff. Your information has been fabulous. Thank you to your staffs as well. I know that it's been a little bit hard that they get possessive of rules. I'd just like to remind everybody that this was one of the top issues in the Wild Futures listening sessions, and we're seeing a response to it. I look through here, lots and lots of lines. It's true simplification, responsive to public concerns. So I just want to thank all of you for the lot of work that's gone into this.
Yeah, I'll just second that. It was in the Wild Futures a lot. So this is an example of the panning out good stuff for the folks.
I just saying the same thing, that this the Wild Futures program at work reflected here. Also, I really do appreciate the time that you took laying out the public comment. It really helped us identify the hot issues. And, you know, some of these were a surprise, but it's reflected in the new regulations that we're doing what the public requested. This was not easy. I know this was a tough one. But thank you very much for taking on a monumental task. Yeah. And I think the general public is going to benefit from it.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a motion. I move to adopt permanent amendments to WAC 220, 312, 010, freshwater exemptions to statewide rules, general rules, WAC 220, 300, 160, definitions, personal use fishing, WAC 220, 310, 070, statewide bait rules, WAC 220, 310, 080, game fish seasons, general rules, WAC 220, 310, 090, game fish possession limits and size limits, WAC 220, 312, 050, freshwater exceptions to statewide rules east side, WAC 220, 312, 060, freshwater exceptions to statewide rules Columbia, 220, 312, 020, freshwater exceptions to statewide rules Coast, WAC 220, 312, 040, freshwater exceptions to statewide rules Puget Sound, and last, WAC 220, 312, 030, freshwater exceptions to statewide rules Southwest. Did I get it all?
As presented by staff.
As presented by staff.
Your mic wasn't totally on. Could you do that?
No, I won't. Thank you.
Motion's been made.
Second.
Second's been made. Any further discussion on the motion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd speak in favor of the motion. There were a couple of these that did deserve a lot of debate. We had public comment on both sides. I think your solution to the eliminate hatchery retention did consider all the other arguments, and I think that's the proper balance there between the different choices. The matter of retaining trout fishing in wild steelhead areas also is one that I think there's considerable thought put into that by the public, and there are reasons to go both ways. Your compromise to come in on the genetic preserve areas, or whatever the proper name is for that, I think is a good stroke at balance as well. And I'll just look forward to getting a pamphlet that's only half as big as the old one when this is all simplified.
I'm afraid we have more work to do then. Maybe a third smaller.
Yeah.
I had gotten some recurrent concerns, specifically from Jameson Lake, that'll now be open year-round. I think that's an example, and you mentioned here $15,000 to extend to operate accesses. I also think there's going to be higher demands on enforcement for when we occur these pretty extensive rule changes, and I'll point to Jameson Lake as an example that used to have a season that was abbreviated and then reopened later. And there are some lakes in the Heights that would close in July and then switch to fly fishing only or whatever. But I'm hope that the department is sensitive to an increased need for enforcement as we move through this process of rule changes that affect opening and closing dates primarily. Just to, you know, because I did receive calls of concern from resort owners about that. And there will be higher demands on enforcement for a period of time until people get used to these.
Okay. Any other further discussion? Okay. I'm ready to act on the motion. All those in favor of the motion as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen.
Before they escape. And there again, Chris and Kelly and wife came to Clarkston here a while back and did a meeting on the guide proviso. And I came back and told these guys that was probably one of the best run meetings I've ever been to, and how it started off a little contentious and how it worked out really well. Where are we at on that, Chris?
So, not quite related to rule simplification.
Right, no, no.
Just to be clear for the folks behind us, the guide proviso was in our budget. They had asked for us to get a survey of guides on the Olympic Peninsula and Klickitat. We expanded that to statewide, which is why we ended up in Clarkston. That needed to be completed and turned back into the legislature on December 31st prior to them convening session. We completed that survey, and I can provide you the full write-up if you'd like to read the spirit of the comments that we heard from the public. I can tell you, you likely won't see much different than what you heard in the room in Clarkston in terms of what we heard statewide. That was a really good exercise for us to get out, meet a tremendous number of guides that we didn't know, get their contact information, and facilitate our ability to communicate with them. So I think at this point that will go back to the legislature, and we would look to some direction from them as to how we would proceed into the future. And maybe Kelly Cunningham or Craig Burley could give you a little bit more detail on whether they've heard any direction. But what I heard up until today was that we've not heard anything further from the legislature as of yet.
Okay. Because I've had two or three guides talk to me since and ask me where it was headed, and I was just, I mean, so, but.
So to be clear, if they left their email with us at that meeting, they were sent the full report that we submitted to the legislature on December 31st.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Director. Chairman, Commissioner, I'll make sure that you get a copy of that final report that we submitted to the legislature. We have it available. I'll make sure we get it to you.
Well, and like I said, in fact, while I was gassing up right before I left to come over here, I ran into a guide, and he was asking me about it, and that's what, because I was quizzing him if he was, he's Idaho, but he also thought he needed to get with Washington, and everybody I've talked to after that meeting are really excited about it, and hopefully it will catch some wheels and get going.
Thank you, gentlemen. Well done.